Welcome to the Vox Show with Vox the Psychic from Vox.org. It's Monday night, January 29th, 2007. It's good to be back with you guys tonight. This sun in Aquarius and the moon in Cancer. So we're going to be taking some calls tonight at 323-284-5166. So give me a call if you have any questions regarding psychic information about your life and or also any other magical or metaphysical subjects like spirits, angels, magical rituals. Because tonight I'm going to be talking about ritual work and some of the elements involved in helping you manifest the best ritual to get your result that's going to benefit your life. So give me a call again today at 323-284-5166. So check it out. And I also wanted to wish a happy birthday to my niece, Jordan Claire, who's going to turn 13 tomorrow. And my friend Mark Miller, who just turned 50. And we just had a really cool party with him this weekend. That was really nice. Aquarians always know how to throw a great party. What can you say? They're very young at heart. And there's a lot of excitement, lots of really cool people, lots of great music. So it's a really kind of interesting time of the year when it's like people are starting to come out of their hibernation mode, which is interestingly enough, you might find out that the Christians actually borrowed the holiday of Beltane and renamed it the illustrious name of Groundhog Day. I like Beltane better. And interestingly enough, like I said, the groundhog crawls out of the hole, and if he sees his shadow, then there's going to be like 6 more weeks of winter. And I'm predicting the groundhog's going to see his shadow, because I just think it's been a very weird winter that we've been having, and I think it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. Although I hope I'm wrong. And actually, did you know that they actually they grow these groundhogs and groom them for this major day? It's pretty hysterical. You should check it out sometime. Anyway, some other trippy things that happened, which I think are kind of interesting, are the death of Angelina Jolie's mom, Marceline Bertrand, who is really beautiful and really an amazing person, and had her children, Angelina Jolie and her brother James Haven. So I'd like to wish her all the best on leaving the planet and getting to the next place, wherever she's going. But she passed away from cancer, and I thought that was really sad. But she had apparently been sick for about 7 years, so people were kind of expecting it. But I always think it's interesting when I study somebody's birthday chart and compare it to the day that they pass away from the earth plane. And the moon was actually in Taurus crossing over her sun. And the next day it was crossing over Angelina's moon. So I just think, wow, that's so trippy when those kind of astrological things happen. I can't even imagine that you can't prove astrology to people sometimes. You know, it's kind of interesting. But anyway, so some of the planets today, as we said, the moon's in Cancer, making everybody kind of tripped out and very emotional. So I won't be surprised if we get some Pisces, Cancer, and Scorpios calling. And also doing a little numerology on today's numbers. Today is a 29 day, which equals 11. And that's also, again, a high number of the moon. It's master number, and it makes people very emotional, very intense, very psychic, very intuitive, and ultimately completely annoying. So if you have to deal with any water sign people today, just know it's going to be one of those stressful days. Now, when you add all the numbers of the date up, you will get 21, which is boiled down to 3. And in Western numerology, 3 is the number sacred to Jupiter, and supposedly having a great time, partying, enjoying yourself. I don't know. I just think that when the moon's in Cancer, everybody just wants to stay home and eat marshmallows and drink Hershey syrup out of the can. You know, the things that people do when they're like really emotional. So some of the stuff that I was talking about today was with some clients that have been doing some ritual work. And it's kind of interesting when you start burning candles or doing any kind of ritual work, different kinds of traditions use different colors and oils in a different way. So Kabbalistically, for anybody out there that ever studies the work of people like Aleister Crowley or people like that, or the Golden Dawn or Thelemic traditions, there are a whole other group of colors and numbers and attributions that go with the Kabbalistic way of doing rituals. And it's a little bit different for regular old-fashioned pagans who tend to use colors in a more emotional kind of way. So if you're interested in maybe getting a kit or learning how to do a Beltane ritual for yourself this coming Friday, let me know. You can always write to me at vox@vox.org, and you can also join the forum and find out more about that, because I have a whole bunch of different folders dedicated to different subjects, and people can learn a lot from that. So when we were talking about doing basic rituals, what people don't understand about magic, people have been contacting me going, what is this magic thing? You know, how does it work? And what does it do? And is it real? And I can't really say that anything's real or not. But what I will say is I've had a lot of people calling me recently that did some very simple rituals, and they followed the techniques that I outlined for them, and they actually got things to manifest the way that they want it. So you gotta wonder, are candles magical, or is it the people that light them that are magical? Well, I basically just think candles, like we have said before, they're just a focus for your energy. And depending on the sign of the moon and the phase of the moon, you're going to be able to attract things or let them go. When the moon is waxing like what it is right now, you're going to be in a mode of attraction and gaining things and bringing things to you. And when it's in a full moon mode, or it's starting to wane, things are at their apex, and you're going to start noticing that things start dissipating and the energy starts lessening. And that's kind of it can be good either way. It depends on what you want to use it for. Now, if you're using candles in an elementary way, you might want to pay attention to the elemental colors, such as yellow is east, red is south, water is in the west, and earth is in the north. So if you want to manifest things of an intellectual nature or a mental nature, you're going to want to burn your candles or do them when the moon is waxing in an air sign, such as Gemini, Libra, or Aquarius. And if you're trying to manifest things of an active nature, say you need something to happen, you're trying to jumpstart a project, you're going to want to do your magic when the moon is waxing in Aries, Sagittarius, or what's the other pesky one? Leo. Yes. How conspicuous by his absence. And you're trying to create emotional calm or balance, you might want to do a ritual while the moon is waxing in a water sign, such as Cancer, Scorpio, or Pisces. And then if you want to do things such as money magic and grounding and security work, you're going to want to burn your candles when the sun is, or actually the moon, is in a earth sign, such as Taurus, Virgo, or Capricorn. So those are some basic ideas for you. So you might want to start breaking out the candles and the colors, and just even start playing around with the basic elemental aspects of what you're trying to bring in. Now, I've had some people tell me that some spells that I gave them worked really well, especially now some of the harder ones are to do these really abstract spells where you're getting people to change their minds about things, and those are really kind of interesting. Had somebody that did a simple Mercury spell that basically combined all the different elements of Mercury into a very small mini spell and wound up acing a statistics course that she hadn't even studied for. And I personally found that kind of ridiculous and kind of hard to believe, because statistics is just so ridiculous. But I guess she just used her guessing situation and she wound up getting everything right, like 98%. And I thought, wow, that's pretty trippy. Some people, too, have contacted me about, like, how do I make myself invisible? Well, there's actually kind of simple Hollywood way is try to get into hide on a Friday night looking like crap. That's kind of a good way to, simple way to become invisible. But you have to really be careful sometimes with the spells that you do use to do things of that nature, because if you turn yourself invisible, people think, oh yeah, you're going to completely disappear and, you know, things like that. And that's not how it works. And it's not like having a cloak or a veil of invisibility around you. But what you do when you do an invisibility spell is you kind of alter your energy rate and you kind of become, you know, piece of the furniture, a genuine wallflower. And people will just look right at you and they won't even see you. It's kind of interesting. But you always have to be careful when you're doing mercurial rituals, because Mercury is the god who likes to play tricks on you. He's the trickster god. And he can do fun stuff like make you invisible, and then, of course, you cross the street, and then a truck slams into you. Yeah, that's a Mercury ritual gone wrong, so you don't want to do one of those. But another fun Mercury ritual that I had a friend do was she was being sought out to make some extraordinary payments for something that somebody thought that she owed. And she didn't have the money to do this, so she did an invisibility spell that I created for her. And the funny thing is, the next day when she called back to give the people her information, the person who had originally called her wasn't there any longer. And not only were they not there, they had never been there, and there was no such person. So I kind of wonder what happened to that poor person that made the phone call to my friend demanding money. So all I can say is magic works. It doesn't work the way you think it does. See, you got to be careful for what you're asking for. Such as if you're trying to create an out or a remedy for something that's taking you, 20, 30 years to create, such as like get fat or get a hardcore addiction. Those are things that are really difficult to get rid of. Now, what would you say? What phase of the moon should you do a ritual for when you're trying to get rid of things? And the answer is decreasing or waning moon, and also known as the waning moon of Wayne. Just think of Wayne, Wayne's World. So you want to get rid of things, do it on that particular aspect and burn the appropriate color based on the kind of idea that you're going for. So to start out with, since you guys are hopefully little magical babies, you'll just start out with the elemental colors. Now, the zodiacal colors start getting a little bit more funky because they become the shades in between of the elemental colors. So those are things also that you might want to check out on my site and also in the forum. If you want to join, you should check it out at vox.org/forum and just sign up. It's free, and you can browse around all the different kinds of folders and the different kinds of magic that are able to be done, that you can decide what kind of ritual you want to do. Now, I had a kind of fun time over at my sister's house this weekend, and had a whole bunch of like really fun ladies that were over there that I see all the time every time I go over there, and they've been getting readings from me for a long time now. And they were probably just humoring me at first, but they've been trying out these crazy ideas of mine for a while, and they started getting some interesting successes. And it was pretty fun to find out that I had some of the men out there in Agora, of all places, doing rituals and actually getting stuff to happen that they wanted to manifest. So that's always cool when the guys are into it, you know. All the guys always think, yeah, girls are into the magic and girls are all gullible and everything. And guys strive really hard to pretend like they're skeptical, you know. But they're suckers like the rest of us. And they all want magic to work. And it does work. And it doesn't even work just because you believe it necessarily. But I think that when you take the time to gather the materials that you're going to do a ritual with, put them in order, make an altar, focus your mind on the intent of the thing that you're trying to manifest in your life. You anoint the candles, you set everything up, you make it really beautiful, and you have like a little ritual between you and the universe. And to me, that's pretty much what God is anyway, so I don't think there's anything actually paganistic about it whatsoever. It's just that moment that you clarify inside your own mind and in your own heart what it is that you're trying to manifest. You make contact with that, and then all of a sudden it has no choice but to happen because you've created it so clearly by focusing on the astral. So once in a while when I get students, they want to just, okay, I want to like manifest spirits just by waving a wand or like charging some kind of magical seal or doing something really extraordinarily simple. And yeah, you can do those things, but it actually takes a long time to make magic that simple. What happens is people want to see these spirits. They want to see the angel. They want to, like, kind of like Thomas in the Bible, they want to stick out something in the rib of somebody just to prove that it's real. And it's kind of insulting. And it doesn't really work that way. So what you want to do when you're trying to get into magic, you want to try to fortify your mind with as much concrete imagery as possible so that you can use all of that, manipulate it in your own subconscious mind, throw it back out, create it in your own image, and manifest it, because it has to earth on the physical plane in order for there to be balance in the universe. It's really that simple. If you think like, okay, you go to a magician and he's pulling a rabbit out of a hat. Are you really believing that he's pulling a rabbit out of a hat? Well, yeah, it looks like he's pulling a rabbit out of the hat. But where did the rabbit come from? Probably Pets R Us, or the vet, or the animal shelter. He pre-decided that he was going to pull a rabbit out of the hat, so he went and bought a rabbit, stuck it in the hat, and he just managed to cleverly hide it from you until he decides to pull it out and blow your mind. But there's really nothing magic about magic if you sit and think about it. It's whatever it is that you want to manifest, focus it, and that's what candles are great for. That's why we're talking a little bit about candle magic today and basically how it works. And it works very simply in that way. Now, other aspects of candle burning, you can't necessarily just expect to just light one candle, you know. What people fail to recognize is you want to balance that energy. So usually when you're doing a candle ritual, you'll set out two extra candles. And those are called the altar candles. And they should be white. Some magicians will use a black candle on the left and a white candle on the right to symbolize universal balance. But you most ordinarily use the two white candles. Then place your subject candle of the elemental color that you're trying to utilize and trying to attract the thing that falls under that topic, such as, again, the mental energies. You might want to use yellow and the active energies of manifesting something in an active, kind of intense way. You'll use red and all the other colors as we were mentioning before. Now, I think it's kind of funny. You go to like normal witchcraft shops around town or metaphysical places, and you always find like the love candles, and they're always red. And I always just start laughing, going, oh my God, the poor sucker who buys the red candle for a love spell is just going to be so in trouble and so regretting it in about 5 minutes. Why do people decide to burn red candles for love when love has nothing to do with the color red? You know, you think, oh yeah, well, St. Valentine, red hearts, yeah, well, look what happened to him. Wasn't pretty. A lot of people don't even bother to read up on what happened to St. Valentine to make him get his own special day, but it wasn't pretty. In another bloody situation, you know, St. Valentine's massacre, you think about blood being spilled, you think about red, you think about the color of violence. Now, what in the hell does that have to do with love is beyond me. Love is a blend of colors, and ordinarily, if you're going to do something Kabbalistic and something really safe, when you do a love ritual, you're going to burn the color green for grounding and balance and mutual love and respect, you know? So just letting you know, a couple little things are about rituals. We've got a caller over here. So who is this that I'm talking to?
Ah, yes, this is Alex.
Hi, Alex. How's it going?
Decent. Yourself?
I'm doing great. So what's up with you, my friend?
Well, I just tuned the show, and as I tuned in, you were talking about kind of really dealing with angels, and, well, not just angels, but, you know, anything that doesn't necessarily exist on a material plane.
Exactly.
And one thing I wanted to ask you about was energy questions, because anytime you're dealing with something of a mental nature, it's like, they're probably going to be straightforward, I would think, that, hey, you know, if you ask them who they are, you can kind of work with them that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted just more information about, no, but just an idea of who you're working with.
Oh, like the spirits that I work with?
Sure.
On a personal level? Well, I've been doing magic for a really long time, so I started out with like your basic kind of spirits, like angels, trying to figure out what was going on with them. There's a whole tradition of angel magic, which I'm sure you know about, and there's more than like Christian aspect of angels. There are the first stuff that I worked with were like more like the Kabbalistic angels. You have the angels of the day, the angels of the hour, the angels of the month. Sounds like Oprah's book club or something, you know. But basically, the first ones that I worked with were those, and then moved up into the ideas of planetary spirits and planetary angels, planetary intelligences, and started out with that. And then, of course, did all the things that all teenagers do, which is bust out the Guaisha. Woohoo! Yeah! Demons are us. Yeah, check it out. Those
I love that. That's like, this demon will allow you to know anything at once in any mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, shortcuts.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the joke of the day, is how I say. I'm famous for calling it the joke of the day because it really is. So, you know, what's your background with understanding the Guaisha? And for all those of you out there who don't know what the Guaisha is, those are the 72 corresponding spirits that fell from heaven that correspond to the 72 major angels in heaven. So they're the balancing act of all the goody-two-shoe angels that are hanging out on the fluffy clouds up there. So how did you get introduced to those, Alex?
Well, random places, random situations. I've always kind of really been interested in different otherworldly contacts. So I just kind of bumbled into it that way.
So what were some of the ones that you started out checking out yourself? It's
Nothing
okay.
really
Don't
cool.
worry. Nobody knows who you are, so it's cool.
Well, I once conversed with Satan. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah. Tell him I said hello.
Tell him he owes me money.
Exactly. Yeah. Make all checks payable, too. You know. And, you know, this probably scares some listeners, but, you know, what the hell? No pun intended, you know. But when you're a teenager, you know, or even if you're not a teenager, but you're a budding magician, you know, those are the things that most, you know, titillate somebody who's looking for quick answers. And
plus with the whole rebellion thing going on.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, my life is falling apart. Quick, I need to call up a fallen spirit, you know, and get this straightened out. And I think it's hysterical. I mean, I've actually had spirits tell me how funny it really was. I was commanding a spirit one time, like, you will do my bidding and you will do this, blah, blah, blah. And the spirit, because I'm psychic, I actually have the ability to converse with spirits. And maybe I'm out of my mind, but I really don't care. At least my spirits aren't telling me to do some crazy stuff, you know. They're just talking to me and informing me of things. But this one spirit, in particular, was the 13th spirit, Beleth, who's somebody that causes affection between men and women. And you know, it's more like a love spirit. And I was like, you will do this and you will do that. And Beleth just started laughing hysterically and pointing at me. And I just happened to be doing this ritual with a really well-known magician named S. Jason Black, who actually put together the Guaisha. Guaisha grimoires for some different people in the OTO. And David goes, what in the hell? I'm like, this spirit is laughing his ass off, pointing at us and just screaming with laughter, doubling over backwards. And he got really pissed. And he goes, well, ask him why he's laughing at us. And the spirit literally told me, what are you trying to do? I mean, I'm a fallen spirit, dude. If I had all that power, don't you think I'd be back in heaven by now, you know, getting my nails buffed and getting my back waxed? And I was like, oh, my God, I had never even considered that these fallen spirits could just be so, like, you know, philosophical. And, like, so straight up and honest. And I was, like, flabbergasted. And we just pretty much ended the ritual right there.
Probably a good thing.
It's like, oh,
I've gotten that before. I've gotten, like, little spirits that I'd be like, hey, look at them. And then they'll describe whatever I'm doing while I'm working on the computer. And then give some, like, little insight into the situation on top of it. And then sort of laugh and flounder off.
Yeah, you know, stuff that doesn't necessarily occur to you on a conscious level, you know.
Right.
And of course,
it's not even uneerie, it's just a little bit, it's like awkward, I guess, for a second.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, and this is where you have to hand it to God. I mean, if you believe in God or not, you have to hand it to God for creating some spirits that make you think that they have nothing to do with God. Because everything's going to bring you back to the source. It doesn't matter what road you're on. That's why they say all roads lead to Rome. If you decide, okay, my life sucks, I'm going to call up a spirit and get some money, right? So you're doing all this heavy-duty ritual work, and somehow the universe has demanded that you show some kind of reverence in some way to take a ritual and to do it and to focus your energy. And isn't that some way, like, exactly how you're manifesting what you're trying to create in your life? You're showing some kind of reverence to some kind of being that you think has the power to give you something that you can't get yourself, you know?
Or speed up the process anyways.
Exactly. And in that way, even though the spirits supposedly are fallen, they bring us up, you know, because they bring us up from the bottom saying, hey, you know what? If you think I'm giving this to you, it's only because you are taking the time to do the ritual yourself. And this is where, have you ever read the Lamegaton at all?
No.
The Lesser Key of Solomon?
Some of it, but not.
Yeah, that's
really
the Guaisha.
Not to really.
Yeah, it's the Guaisha book. And it's where Crowley talks about how he believes that all of the fallen spirits and their sigils are all actually gateways inside the human brain, that they are actually not external to humanity, that they are actually almost kind of hardwired into us on some level, as are possibly the angels. And the book by Duquette also kind of mentions things of that nature. He pretty much, I would suspect from reading his book, kind of agrees with that. But I have a hard time believing that, and I'll tell you why. How can a spirit tell me something that's completely not even in my own head? I mean, completely new information. That's when you know it's channeled or that something is reaching you. Yeah, what were you going to say?
No, I was just thinking about the nature of perception and, like, how you'd actually perceive whatever the voice was coming through, how the channels and the routes that it would go with, like, lower spirits versus actual people who are rank, I guess, if you want to say it that way, angels and demons and whatnot.
What's exactly your question? Speak a little bit more. Speak a little bit more clearly so people can understand you, too.
Well, an example of the question, in effect, would be, I was recently in Sacramento, and I was looking at the work of Zachary Sitchin.
Oh, yeah, he's a cool guy.
Yeah, totally. And had this nice little weird vibe come over me when I sat down on my couch and had the discourse start to descend from this spirit that decided to tell me a couple of things about people in my life, not using names, but using references to situations and details that would allow me to choose them. And, you know, I accepted it all, I walked it all, took it all through, but never really interviewed the spirit, so to speak. Interview the spirit? So I hadn't directly tried to contact the spirits. I wasn't in the mood to do that kind of stuff.
Right.
But this one had come along. And, the way that it felt inside, it's like, this is important enough that I should listen to it regardless. I kind of sort of went into stream mode and listened to it.
Uh-huh.
And so situation we went and you said, okay, we're going to do this, and you can't do this with this person, you can't do this with this person, just trust me.
Zachary himself kind of translating what he felt that the spirits were actually saying to you personally?
Who? Zachary?
Yeah.
I wouldn't know. I didn't talk to him.
Okay, but so these are things that were happening to you personally.
Yeah, there were people who regarded three things. They regarded two individuals, and they gave situations that would be indicative of these individuals. And they mentioned references to the future, where they were kind of heading, and how that would be kind of bad for my situation.
Right.
And I thought it was all very real-time, immediate. And
now, did you do a particular ritual to contact these spirits?
Oh, hell no. No, no. But again, that brings me back to, like, you don't know who you're contacting. And you don't know where the contact came from.
Right, but here's my question. Are you just, like, you know, washing the dishes or just doing a normal chore or just living your life and all of a sudden you get contacted by, like, spirits or energies that just start informing you psychically of these things?
No, that's not normally how it goes. Like, I've had situations that were similar to it where I've bumped up against spirits, but, like, probably been a year, maybe longer since.
What I'm trying to find out is how you got this information. Did you will it through a ritual?
No, I didn't. I didn't at all. I wasn't even looking for contact.
Right, but that's exactly what I'm asking you. Maybe you're not quite understanding my question. Like, you're just living your life and you're just going on about your daily life. How did you get contacted by these energies?
My personal opinion on the matter is I was on Christmas break. So this was Christmas break, and basically sitting around, and I was reading the work on Zachary Sitchin and looking through his ideas and kind of thinking about that kind of stuff.
Okay.
That's when, like, the feeling of presence came over me.
Okay, so so you were basically catalyzed by reading some works.
Right.
Okay. That's what I was trying to clarify for the listeners. Like, how did you bump into this information, you know?
Sure.
What was that all about? Which book were you reading of his?
I was actually just looking at his website and reading through personal, like, the different blurbs from the books that he has, and, looking at the ideas, like, his ideas of the Draconian versus different races and all that kind of stuff.
Now, what's your personal take on what Sitchin is talking about, like the planet Marduk and those kinds of things? He was stating that there were extra planets that used to be here that we came from and all this kind of detailed info. What's your personal opinion about that?
I'm actually kind of in favor of it, just for the nature of how I perceive Earth to exist or whatnot. There's just too much space to not be occupied by other intelligence, other physical life beings as well. I mean, like, life based on the life on other planets, I don't have a problem with that. And the idea of seeding the Earth is so straightforward, in my opinion. I mean, I'm also of the same belief that, you know, human DNA is mutated by fallen angels as well, so...
How can anybody really argue against that? I mean, even the Scientologists, as some people think, they're totally out of their minds. But if you read the Bible, it's pretty much saying the same darn thing as Scientology and a whole lot of other religions. We're in the Nephilim, which were the giants that were angels that were cast out of heaven and fell to earth and mated with the daughters of men. And there's all kinds of Kabbalistic ways of reading that. So I find it hard to believe that people that read the Bible don't get that from that. You know, it's like, well, where the hell do you think we come from, you know?
Yeah,
and not only that. Go ahead. I was going to say,
people don't collapse ideas, and then they tend to separate them. It's like, okay, this is true, but this is true. And they happen at the same time. What they do is just they're separated by time.
Yeah, the only problem that I have with evolution, the way people are talking about it, I mean, you have, like, what, 400 million years that the dinosaurs actually ruled the Earth? I mean, that's a long-ass time to not have any kind of evolution whatsoever. And that we're here a fraction of that time, and boom, we're flying to other planets? I mean, come on, get real. I mean, what the hell is going on? There's no way that something didn't intervene just because we can't find out who it is, what it is, and what happened. You know, but the only problem I have with Sitchin's work and even the people who write the 1111 stuff, I find it absolutely pompously ridiculous that anybody will deign to name the actual beings and the exact time that they were here. I think that stuff is completely beyond our knowledge and beyond our ability to prove that things happen. And I think that's why most people don't believe it, you know? So yet
actually, brings us back around to the question, because with that particular contact, like, as soon as I came back, I was so energetic and so in love with life. And you know, the daily little stuff I do, like the card readings where I'll try and guess the card and all that kind of stuff, right on, everything just over the top. And within a week or so, I started to doubt the intelligence. I was like, you know, I didn't check out the spirit. I didn't ask the spirit anything. It just came to me.
Right.
And now I'm starting to, you know, get along this path. And I don't know anything about where this information came from. And I didn't get, like, the feelings. I kind of dropped. And you know, as I dropped that, I noticed that my enthusiasm for what I was doing dropped off as well. And I actually felt decreased in the things that I was doing.
Yeah, now I can explain that to you in my own. Everything I explain is in my own personal opinion, of course. It's not meant to be an empirical statement or anything like that. But what I think you experienced is what I call Kabbalah madness. And even though it wasn't technically Kabbalistic in nature, and that's what happens when you start noticing links between one thing and another, like the attributions per se, between planets, numbers, colors, realities, perceptions. And once you were really tuned into that, like, wow, this is really happening, you know, and all of a sudden once you start doubting it, it kind of kills the vibe. But the cool thing is that you can still get that state back later on when another completely random piece of information links itself again to that prior perception, that prior excited situation that you hooked into. And that's why I think, you know, people like Zachariah and even people that I don't personally actually even get behind their philosophy, I still think it's cool that they're able to present their ideas just at least to get some lower level mental human beings to start at least considering the possibility of what could really be laying out there. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So I guess what I can ask you is, I mean, in your wanderings, have you ever come across, you know, curious, beneficial, malevolent, whatever kind of spirit that just...
You're kind of mumbling, so I want you to speak a little bit more clearly so people can really get what you're saying.
Well, I guess the question is really is, I mean, in your wanderings through wherever... Where did you go?
I got some weird places.
Yeah. Curious what you've run into there and how you decided, what's the process of identification? Hi, my name is Vox, and for you, what you go through?
This is an excellent question. First off, you know, when I was really young and my sister and I would, like, contact spirits that we didn't exactly know, per se, what we were doing. We were, like, hooking up with things like Ouija boards and stuff like that. And like we were like 6 and 7 or something. And we had like that planchette flying all over, spelling words we didn't even know yet. And somebody else had to tell us what we were writing. And that was pretty interesting. And some very bizarre predictions and information came through that way. And my mother, who was a pretty well-known psychic, always had people at the house, famous mystics and swamis and all kinds of strange people come into our house, and she would do readings and numerology and astrology and interpret dreams. So I had this really great growing up where, first off, even like right while other people were being woken up to the idea of the ABCs, I was trying to memorize the zodiac in the proper order. And the planets and the degrees and blah blah blah, so that was my little seedling ground. Then, as I was telling you later on, I started doing ritual work, pretty much using some really old grimoires that I happened to come very fortuitously into, in some very strange manner. So I was doing actual rituals and commanding spirits to show up, and as I was saying, and angels. Now, after getting all that, what I found out, I wound up joining a group, the Ordo Templi Orientis, which is also known as the OTO, and later on joined the Golden Dawn. But the basic foundations of those groups and Western magic forced me, by virtue of the fact that you can't evolve in the group if you don't take certain examinations. And I was forced to learn the Hebrew alphabet, the Greek alphabet, the attributions of the 22 paths in the Tree of Life, the 10 and / 11 Sephiroth, the ancient names, all the intelligences, planetary spirits, like what's technically called all the Kabbalistic attributions of all the numbers, the degrees, the planets, the signs, the colors, the scents, the smells, I mean, you name it. And it's a book that I would actually really strongly advise anybody to get. I've been living with mine for like my whole life. It's called Liber 777, also known as Sephiroth, and also has another book in it called Sefer Yetzirah. No, not Sefer Sephiroth, excuse me. But these are all ancient Kabbalistic teachings. And I memorized all this stuff, and yeah, it took absolute years to get this information. And then in alignment with the proper spells and rituals such as protection, like the lesser banishing ritual, the pentagram and the hexagram, invoking pentagrams and hexagrams and the opening of the watchtowers, all of the basic foundational rituals of Western magic, got those under my belt. Now, what happens after you start contacting spirits again, after you have that information in your subconscious mind, you wind up finding, first off, what element is that spirit or angel under the rulership of? What is the planet that that spirit or angel is under the rulership of? What direction, what king or queen or specific tarot card or any of these kinds of attributions, and that spirit has to obey the particular gestures that you make and the sacred words that you utter. And if you utter certain kinds of words or make particular magical gestures upon a spirit or an angel in your presence, and it dissolves or gets freaky with you or starts changing in a really horrific way, then you know you're being played with by either an inferior spirit or angel, or some imposter low-level entity is coming through to mess with your head, give you bad information, and possibly obsess you. And some of the worst things that can happen in a ritual is you think, oh yeah, I did the invocation or the evocation, whatever you've done. Oh, and the spirit didn't show up. Fuck it. You know, this stuff isn't working, right? And you break the circle and you get obsessed. I mean, there's some crazy stuff that happens to people. And yeah, a lot of crazy stuff has happened to me personally that I don't think certain other people might actually be able to recover from. And quite frankly, I've seen a lot of magical casualties on this side of the road. But you have
to think it was actually a crazy event, or you think it was something that was perceived as crazy?
When you start doing magic in a particular disciplined way, there is a thing that happens to your consciousness wherein you recognize consciously what's happening, and you're able to analyze it in that same moment and recognize what a normal person would perceive it as at the same time you are perceiving it. So you have a split consciousness, as it were. Like when I'm channeling a spirit or an angel or somebody's spirit's talking to me from the earth plane, telling me how they died or whatever, their pet or a pet's talking to me, I'm able to go, okay, the front part of my consciousness is like, hi, this is Vox. I know I'm psychic. I know that I'm an initiate. I know that I did all these studies for many, many years. I know I'm protected. I do the rituals of protection. I know inside I'm a good person. But somehow this other thing is telling me all this other stuff in a different part of my head. And I kind of put the Vox part to sleep, but Vox is still conscious. And all that information comes effortlessly through my mouth, like without even knowing what I'm going to say next. Like when people call and they go, oh, what's going to happen tomorrow? What color underwear am I wearing? You know, I don't even know what I'm talking about. That's why I say I don't know consciously. But I know who's in control of my vehicle, and that's me. But I allow these other ideas and perceptions to come through my mind, filter them through my consciousness, and utter them in the physical reality in the presence of other people. Or even sometimes just myself writing these things down. And those things will manifest, or they will be resonant with someone's truth or their experience. And the only way to make sure that you're not going crazy, or you're not dealing with lower level elementals or playful earthbound negative spirits, is you have to test those spirits and those angels. Because sometimes it's not even an angel that you're talking to. It could be the dead spirit of some psycho killer, you know, that's just parading around your living room as an angel. You know, so you have to do the test. It's like if I came to your house with one of those big checks and pretended to be Ed McMahon giving you the lottery from Publishers Clearinghouse, I mean, and I didn't look like Ed McMahon, or maybe I had an Ed McMahon suit on, you'd have to go, all right, can I see some credentials here? You know what I'm saying? So you ask and request and you demand that spirit's credentials, their magical credentials, their magical certificate. And if they can't prove it to you, and by that time, you definitely can see what's going on. You should be able to understand how to read Hebrew, Greek, and any other kinds of ancient languages like Theban alphabet. You should be able to have all that information at your fingertips to be able to prove or disprove what it is that that spirit or that entity is telling you. And if it's messing with your mind, you instantly banish it. You blast it out. So those are the ways, and they're very involved, what I just said. So it's not like, oh yeah, I decided, you know, I'm going to speak to the spider monster and, you know, see what it comes up. And people that play with magic in that way are destined to, like, you know, blow some gaskets and wind up on the side of the road. And, you know, maybe you have met some of those people. But dabbling with magic without the proper rituals of protection is just like really asking for it, you know. Even if you're a chaos magician, and I also joined the IoT at one point, those guys are some of the best magicians I've ever met in my life. I mean, they were absolutely insane. Like people like Peter J. Carroll. Have you ever read like the book Liber Null and Psychonaut?
Some.
Yeah. It sounds like you get interested by some topics and you might buy some books or check it out, but you got to learn to like open up the book from the front part and look. I know you're laughing because I'm with you. It's like, and read it from top to bottom. I mean, really read the preface, read the intro, read the bibliography, read the notes, you know, check out the publisher, find out like who are these people. I mean, really, really read it. And it doesn't matter if you understand a word of what you're reading. That's actually irrelevant. The fact is, sometimes magic is very much like an onion. And you can read like a book like Magic in Theory and Practice or Modern Magic by my friend Don Craig. And you read it and you go, what the hell are they talking about? And then you read it again. And then you read it again. And you read it again. And every single time you read one of these powerful books, you know, like Magic in Theory and Practice, you're going to learn that you didn't even know what you were reading the first time you read it. You know, things will just start going off, clicking in your head. Lights will go off. Bells will sound. And it's not because you're stupid or anything. It's because you weren't ready to understand that information. You know what I mean? It becomes apparent to you. And it's like reading between the lines. You know, there's a lot of people that will even pick up the Goetia book and they'll study all the seals and they'll make Xerox copies or they'll draw it, you know, and they'll just command the spirit to show up. And it's like, what are you thinking? These things, and it's not because the spirit can't show up of its own volition, especially if Crowley's right and it's just in your head. But if you take the time to put down all the elements, all the protective circles, the candles, the oils, the incenses, do the prayers and all this kind of stuff, you actually wind up putting yourself into a really heavy-duty hypnotic state. and magical state of mind wherein you're really not on the earth plane anymore, and you really can commune with the higher selves, the angels and the other kinds of spirits. And if you are really in tune and you're protected and balanced over a period of time, you will see those spirits through your third eye. You know, have you ever wondered, like, you know, why you try to do a ritual and you can't see the spirit, so you think, oh yeah, it didn't show up? Has that ever happened?
Not necessarily. I see a lot of dots and lights. I see a lot of blue lights.
Yeah. You know, I forget what those are called. Those are actually, they have an actual name. I'm going to look it up when we're done talking. But cool. those things actually show up in your eyelids and in the front of your eyes, and I can't remember the name of it. But what will happen?
Not necessarily like the squigglies, though. I mean, like, you know, I mean, like, what is it, the automation or something like that, where you actually have like the paisley.
Exactly.
But anyways, go on.
Yeah,
that's but not like that. It's very singular individual.
Yeah, those are not, that's nothing to do with psychic vision. Now, what will happen sometimes when you start really getting into the psychic vision is your third eye will start throbbing. You know, when I use my third eye, like, I mean, at this point, I use it like every day, pretty much 24/7. But I have like a little bump in the middle of between my eyes. It's like really strange. It's honest to God, it's like a muscle. And I really believe that, you know, it's very strange. And it's, I think, from utilizing it so often and so intensely and with such focus. And it would be cool to find out if other people had that kind of situation. But when you are seeing things with your third eye, no, you're not seeing them with your physical eyes. And I've gotten some students that just got completely pissed off and bored. They're like, I want to see some damn spirits. Where the hell are they? And I'm like, look. Unless you learn how to do your psychic development, you do these rituals and you protect yourself and you bump up your etheric body, you know, you're not going to see these things. And they go, well, I bought some Dittany of Crete and, you know, I stuck my pet bird in the circle. I'm like, ah! And people are like trying to like conjure these spirits and say, damn it, you little spirit, you better show up. And they're not going to. They are not going to, because spirits... That's why they're spirits. And I'm not talking ghosts. I'm talking spirits, our energies. Have you ever read any of the magical books where they talk about the intelligences of the particular planets and the angels of the planets and the spirits of the planets? Have you
nope.
ever seen that?
I'd love to. Like, that sounds really interesting.
They're in any kind of book, like if you could check out the Golden Dawn book. You know, the basic one, or what are some other good ones? Magic in Theory and Practice, flat out. That's the book to get. And if you want it to be more kind of sort of normal, you could buy my friend's book, Modern Magic, until mine comes out. And he puts things in pretty basic terms, you know. But all of the planets, all the seven ancient planets, have planetary intelligences, which are pretty cool. You can deal with those guys. And they're very helpful. They can stimulate certain kind of awareness in your mind, and you can learn a lot from the intelligences of the planets. And then there are the angels of the planets, and then there are the spirits of the planets. And my old friend, Lon Duquette, once when I was first starting out doing some other serious ritual magic, said, whatever you do, do not evoke the spirits of the planets. You will get your ass kicked. And I thought, well, you know, what could hurt? Of course, like all idiots do, but, or magical fools, whatever you call us. And I, at one point, evoked the spirit of the sun on my friend S. Jason Black's suggestion, because he was doing it, and he pretty much exploded, and I pretty much exploded. It's a fun story. I'll have to share it next time. But suffice it to say, when you deal with a planetary spirit, it's complete, uncontrollable, nuclear, I'm going George Bush on you, yeah, nuclear kind of energy of that planet to the nth degree, positive, negative, just pure force. And those are things that can't be contained. But the Goetia spirits can be contained, especially within a triangle, you know. Go ahead. I'm talking your head off over here, but...
No problem. I was going to say, what happened when you... So what happened with the sun tears then?
Oh, well, this is totally funny. So my friend was going, yeah, you got to check out this spirit. He's pretty cool, you know. And I'm like, all right, I'll check it out. This was like June 21st, you know, several years ago. And I had my own temple at the time, and I've usually had my own temple, and it was a real Golden Dawn temple with the pillars and the whole nine yards. And it happened to be June 21st, which is, of course, the summer solstice. It's the greatest powerful day of the sun. So I thought, what better day to call up Sorath? And I called him up. I was like, okay, mofo, show up, dude. And I kept getting this feeling like, leave me alone. I can't do that. And I'm like, ah, come on, dude, show up. Come on. I got the right day and everything. And I'm just like waving my freaking wand like a total freak, wearing my robes, whirling around like a little demon. And I'm not kidding you, okay? The ground beneath my feet started to move. And no, I don't do drugs, and I certainly don't do them during rituals. And anybody out there, if you're dropping acid or doing E or smoking pot before your ritual, I'm going to slap you on the astral to stop it. But anyway, I was completely straight. I sensed that heat, like fire, was shooting through my feet. And I was like, damn, this is hot. I felt like I was walking on hot coals. And then, like, the floor started wiggling around like it was volcanic ash or lava. And, I mean, my eyes are open, okay? And this stuff is, like, happening subjectively, not psychically. And then I'm looking at the wall, and all of a sudden, a crack happens in the wall. There was no earthquake. But a crack happens, and then a hole emerged in the wall. And I swear, I felt like something was staring a hole at me. The walls started spinning around and turned flashing like red and yellow. And I really almost started thinking, yeah, the room is on fire. But I knew that it wasn't. And I was there like a complete magical moron for guess how long? 2 hours. Now, do you know how long a decent evocation should last? Like, 15, 20 minutes. It takes longer to set up to do a ritual than it should do to actually perform the ritual. You get the spirit in, you do it correct, tell the spirit what you want, then get the hell out. Bless the place, close the temple down. You don't sit there for 2 hours draining your psychic energy, trying to command a spirit that cannot manifest to physical presence. So of course, after that, I just said, this is bullshit, you know, and I just banished a spirit, and I just went, wow, that was really weird, but he didn't show up, so I considered the whole thing a failure. Well, in the meantime, I was asking him to give me all this stuff, you know. And the next day, I happened to be parking. I was pulling out of a parking space. And, you know, how fast can I be going? Like, what, 2 miles an hour to try to get out of a parking space? And I get slammed into by a truckload of Middle Eastern guys that were apparently... no slander towards them, but these particular group of guys were doing an insurance scam where they were slamming into people and then claiming that somebody else had caused the accident. And this guy's name was, I'm even going to say it, okay? His name was Aziz, okay? But I'm not going to say his last name, even though I still remember it very clearly. Well, I was completely freaked out. But the weird thing was nothing even happened with this car crash. Nothing, I mean, it was just like a car crash. I mean, don't you think that somebody would actually mention it to their insurance company? Something would happen. Nothing happened with it. And I went back and I was going through my magical journal. I was trying to figure stuff out. And I was going through my Enochian journal. And then I started laughing because I saw that the spirit on the Enochian tablet of fire, the spirit of fire of fire, is named Aziz. And that is the spirit of the sun is fire of fire. And I just busted out laughing, going, all right, you stupid little rat. You know, you wanted to see the spirit of the sun, and he just rammed your car into oblivion and drove off. And I was like, I was like, chalk this one up to experience. And I told my friend, S. Jason Black, and he just laughed. He laughed his ass off. And he was just making fun of me. I'm like, well, you're the one who taught me to evoke this damn spirit. And he's like, well, you know, you're not supposed to command him to physical presence. And I did command him to physical presence to my own, you know, great detriment, I can assure you, because it cost me a lot of money to get my car fixed. I mean, you know what? He was trying to pass me on the right, but I was pulling out to the left of a parking space. So how can you hit somebody from the right when they're pulling out of a parking space? I don't even know how the hell he did that. But it was very unpleasant. And that was only one time I did some really stupid stuff. I've got a whole book coming out with all other kinds of funny, crazy things I tried to pull off magically. Got a big old pie in the face. So when people like go, oh, yeah, you know, you act like you're so smart. And I'm like, dude, if I sound smart, it's because I have done some of the most ridiculous crap magically. I can't even just believe sometimes I'm still sitting here talking about it, laughing about it. You know, but these spirits, they exist, but who knows how they exist. But what I also think is really weird, Alex, is like, how can so many people come back down and say, oh, this spirit is named that? And like a bunch of other people come say, yeah, he said his name was that. I'm like, wow, that stuff is really strange. They agree on various names and numbers, you know, especially even with the Enochian workings when you go on the different ethers and the planes. So it's very, very strange. But the most important thing I think that you can get out of this whole conversation, and I'm really having fun talking to you, by the way, is like learn those protective elements, learn the attributions of the Kabbalah and the Western one, not the Madonna version, okay? Like learn your Sephiroth, learn the 22 paths, learn the tarot cards, learn the planets, learn the signs, learn the planets in the signs, learn the degrees. Learn the holy names of the angels and the spirits and the spheres. Learn all that stuff. Have it under your belt. Learn all the seals and sigils and the kameas of the different spirits and angels. Get that stuff under your belt. Then when you start going in to do a real ritual, it doesn't even have to be anything super fancy. When those spirits or angels come up and they start telling you stuff, you're going to command them to say, hey, how should I or why should I trust you? And where is this information coming from? Because if you get information from a lesser spirit or an angel and you act upon it, you can really screw yourself up. You can.
Oh, hey, that brings up something that I found that was really interesting. When I was reading Zechariah Sitchin stuff,
uh-huh.
He made a mention to, I don't even know what name to use, but the name to, like, yeah, basically the statement presidents. Presidents?
Name the presidents? Devil. You got to speak more clearly. Oh, okay.
The devil, basically. You know, the spaghetti monster, that whole deal.
Right.
And it had mentioned that it had lost the power of ultimate knowing. Like, it couldn't know everything anymore. And that it, you know, basically symbolizing it, fell down to into the fifth sphere of Gevura, which I always thought was interesting. Cause
yeah, I'm here.
There's a lot. That, yeah, no time. Anyways, go on.
Yeah, we were saying you fell into the sphere of Gebura?
Sorry?
You were saying that Satan fell into the sphere of Gebura? Was that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
As far as residence, like that's supposedly where he fell down. But the thing that I had found interesting more than anything else was the fact that, you know, was not completely present, not completely knowing of all facts at all times. That had presence had to seek other sources of information.
Exactly. Because when you're dealing with, like, again, fallen spirits or earthbound spirits, of which, you know, Lucifer was cast out of heaven, and so he has lost his divine right or his divine knowledge, and that's become circumscribed by his physical manifestation in some way on the earth plane. So he can't know everything. And that's why, you know, when people deal with that kind of energy and those kind of spirits, they're very liable to get led astray. And lied to. You know, you have like spirits like Baal, who are like the great liars. You know, there's even literally one of the great demons of all time, I think Belial. And even the word liar comes from the name Belial. So it's very interesting. You know, so you can't really trust those particular spirits, but they can give you a leg up on a situation if you're really hard up for something. But Goetia spirits are really only best used to just do some minor activity. You can't change reality just dealing with lesser spirits. It's just not going to happen. So what I like to do with my clients is first I have them deal with angelic energies to balance themselves and fix what's wrong with them first, and then add to that mix. Because when you start wind up dealing with lesser spirits and you're trying to get them to fix something that's wrong with you, well, you're asking, you know, a fractured spirit to make you whole. I mean, I personally just don't think that that's possible, you know. It's like asking the ice cream man to, like, you know, get you some sorbet from France. It's
what, like, if, what if you just really need some ice cream and that's the only thing you really need to make your life complete?
What now?
I said, what if you just really need some ice cream and, you just, and that's supposed to make you whole?
Well, I really doubt that that's true. I just can't go there. But if it was going to float your boat and a spirit could manifest some ice cream, wow, then that's pretty easy. You know, there's people that, you know, if you just want to get laid, there's spirits that you can, you know, call up to get laid or get a raise. People are going to be flooding the phones now. What spirit is that? And it's like, contact me at vox.org. And guess what? I'm going to put you through the ringer. I'm going to make sure you still know all this other crap before I dish that out. Oh, yeah, like, yo, I'm going to just tell you all this stuff that's going to kill you, you know? Like, why would I do that? So I still put people through the paces. But if somebody wants something very simple, they should be able to figure it out. You know, it's all about inner programming. You know, I have some clients, recently that are trying to attract love into their life. And as I always say, you know, if you want love in your life, just be lovable. That's the easiest spell I know. But the deal is, they just don't believe it's that easy. They think, oh, no, I need a spirit. I need an angel. I need some wax. I need some oil. And, you know, if you think you need it.
Because, like, I tuned into some of the recent, a lot of the manifesting groups, you know, the positive change circles. You tune into those kind of radio stations, you listen to what they say. A lot of the stuff has to do exactly that. See yourself as lovable, see yourself that, and the universe will respond to it. Because now you're attracting, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, but exactly.
So simple to do when you do
it. It is simple, supposedly, but really loving yourself is actually really damn hard. Because why? Because you know how full of it you are. You know your warts. You know your problems. You know a little scoundrel you are secretly when nobody's looking, even God. You know, it's like you're, you know, the little crap that you're always up to. So you have a hard time really believing that you're good and that you deserve something good to happen. That's why telling somebody to love themselves, it sounds really easy, but it is the hardest thing in the world to do, you know? But those are some basic ideas. I would say, I mean, you sound like you have a lot of natural intuitive ability, most definitely. But what I'd like to see you do is stop skimming through the books and take one good one, even if it's Don Craig's book or even going onto my site or checking out the basics. Just sit down and start learning magic from the ground up. Piece by piece, because you know what? Learning that way, taking the shortcut, is taking the long road. Every time you think, oh yeah, I just found this amazing thing, I'm just going to go do that and that'll straighten everything out. Every single time I've tried to take a shortcut in life, it wound up taking me 2 hours longer than if I'd just done it right the first time. You know, but that's the trick of magic, and that's what is so dangerous about it. It promises you instant results for no money down and, like, you know, presto change-o. And that's just not true. Magic is probably the most difficult endeavor that I can imagine a person can go through outside of just bearing and raising a child. You know what I mean? But you definitely owe it to yourself to check some of this stuff out and hopefully, like, get more discipline about it, you know? But anyway, hey, Alex, I've had a great time talking to you, my friend. I'm really glad that you brought up a lot of the different issues that you did regarding magic. And I think these kind of conversations like what we're having right now, I think these are really important because just calling up just to straighten out your life, those are topical things that people can do to fix a symptom, you know. But until you address the cause of that symptom, nobody's going to get it. Magic's only going to be limited, you know. But anyway, Alex, I had a great time talking to you, my friend.
Definitely likewise.
Yeah, and so definitely keep in touch. Let me know how you're developing over there. Feel free to join the forum and stuff and let us know what's going on with you. Okay?
Sure thing.
All right, take care, my friend.
You too. Have a wonderful night.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was our little friend, Alex. We've been just chatting up a storm about magic and the reality of spirits and angels and how do you talk to them and how do you know that that's real and, like, the only way that you can know magic is real is by acting on what those energies and those spirits are telling you to do and finding out, well, obviously within good reason. Don't be ridiculous. Don't do something illegal or negative to hurt yourself. If you're doing stuff like that, that's not real magic anyway. That's just using magic to self-destruct. But pay attention to the things that your angel says, your intuition says, or the way that you're guided in life. And put those informations and ideas into action and keep a magical diary for God's sakes, you know, and write down your feelings and all the things that you're learning intuitively and check them out and find out how they work for you. And very quickly, you won't need a psychic to tell you if something's real or not, because your information from your angel and your sources and spirits will tell you what you need to know. You do it and your life will manifest in a much happier, beneficial way for you and the people around you as well. So anyway, you've been talking to Vox. You can always write to me at vox@vox.org. That's vox@voxx.org. And feel free to join the forum at vox.org/forum. It's totally free. And make sure to give me a call next week at 323-284-5166 with any and all magical questions, personal questions, and all that kind of stuff. So maybe as you have seen today, this is not just your regular call a psychic show. I've studied magic my whole life. I was born into it. My mother was into it. My father, my sisters, everyone around me. Well, I live an intensely spiritual life. And I guess some people might call it a pagan life, but I really don't care. We just are very in tune with nature and with the ideas of magic, and we try to utilize it to help ourselves and bless our lives and family and our friends. So now you can see the depth of some of the stuff that we can talk about on this show. So anytime you want to talk about spirits, candles, magic, you know, processes, rituals, Aleister Crowley, Golden Dawn, Austin Osmond Spare, all the great magicians that have been and have lived and have left behind a great magical legacy, like people like Eliphas Levi. Talk about the Kabbalah, numbers, the Sephiroth, the Tarot, numerology, astrology. And in all of these subjects, we're going to get more and more deeply into each week. And hopefully you guys will be able to learn something from it that will bless and benefit your life. So anyway, feel free always to write me, vox@vox.org. Until then, you also want to subscribe to my podcast because I'll be putting that up later tonight. And other than that, I hope you have a great day. Have a mystical, magical day, in fact. And this is Vox signing off from the Vox Show.